Hello and welcome to the podcast of Vineyard Church here in Maryville, Tennessee. We post our Sunday messages here each week, as well as our conversations episodes, which include interviews, special announcements, and in-depth teaching. You can visit vineyardchurch.us to learn more about us or to access the audio archive. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And now, here's the episode.
All right, good morning. Good to be with you guys. Let me invite you to stand as you're able. If you're thinking, hey, I just sat down. I know, we do this every week. Well, welcome to the Vineyard. Super glad that you're here. My job is a weird, different kind of job, but it's like a lot of jobs in the sense that there are some things that you got to do that you don't really want to do, and there's some things that you get to do that are super fun. And the first week of every year, I get to announce to you guys how much you gave for must-have gifts. So here we go. $56,974. Isn't that fantastic? Hey-o. We set a goal of 35,000, which I think is as high as we've ever set it before. And keep in mind, we did it this year. We've rolled off our Springbrook location as their own church. So before they were helping contribute to that. So we got to this huge number and then way past it with a different set of circumstances. And so it's just super cool and it's amazing. I won't go into a whole spiel about how important it is that we help these people and respond to the people and needs that are there. But man, guys, thank you. It's going to make a huge, huge difference. Well done. I love how generous you guys are. Let me read to you our text for today. And we will say our prayer aloud together. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7 say this. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need. Thank him for all he has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Let's say our prayer aloud together. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you alone are King. Give us wisdom, courage, and kindness that we might bear your image well. Unify us in heart, soul, and purpose, that the world might know your love. Make us your hands, generous and compassionate. Make us your feet, valiant and steady. In service to you and all you've created, give us love greater than fear. Onward for your kingdom, we're declaring your worth, finding our worth in you, and joining you in the renewal of all things. Amen. Thanks. You guys can have a seat. Thanks for doing that with us. Again, it's so good to be with you guys. Thanks for coming out. It's like really cold and even kind of weird and scary outside. So it's really good job. Extra points for you as if it worked like that at all. It doesn't. Nothing like starting off a sermon with some bad theology. It doesn't work like that. But if it did, you guys would get some. Glad you guys are here. A few weeks ago, you might remember that I taught about the peace of God, and then in the process, I kind of opened up a big old philosophical can of worms, and then I said, hey, sorry about that. If you can just hold that tension for a few weeks, we'll come back to it in January. Well, happy new year. Welcome to the Vineyard. It's January, and we're going to get into it. We're going to dive in probably way over our heads all together. Good? All right. The premise of that message a few weeks back, and by the way, we're going to spend a few weeks sort of wrestling with some of these ideas, but the premise of that message a few weeks back was a pretty simple one. We read Philippians 4, as we just did a moment ago, and we saw the obvious, which is that Paul is talking about this kind of peace that's not like, it's not normal. It's this kind of peace that supersedes everything, that transcends everything. It's inextinguishable. It's all-surpassing. It can't be snuffed out. It's not pushed aside by circumstances. It's just this peace that resides, that remains. And he says that all-surpassing, irrepressible peace will guard our hearts and will guard our minds. And then, if you remember, we kind of stated the obvious, which is that that sounds really, really, really good. Like, that sounds incredible. And I think we're, like, all on board. Like, yes, that, please, by all means, thank you. But the question is, all right, so why don't we have that? Like, why is that not the experience of the typical Christian? He's offering it. We really want it. We're accepting it. So what's the problem? And this is what we said is the problem. We can't have the peace of God until we make peace with God. It's really important. You can't have the peace of God until we make peace with God. We looked at Romans 5 for this. Our sin causes basically a problem between us and God. It creates distance between us and God. It's like deadwood on the trail. It keeps us from getting clearly to him. The big church word for this is enmity. And the cross, we saw, is the solution for that problem. When Jesus died on the cross, he made a way for all that gunk standing between us and him to get cleared out. The cross made it so that we can have peace with God. And if we can have peace with God, then we can have the peace of God. It's a central theme of Christianity. Great. But now it's, you know, time for the uncomfortably honest part, which is like, if that's the case, if that's the arrangement, if the cross is the answer for how we can get this type of peace, then why in the wide world are millions and millions and millions and millions of Christians just full on desperate for some morsel of that peace, for some modicum of peace, and just clamoring for that kind of peace that he's talking about? We can't seem to get it because the cross is the answer, man. Well, they've got the cross part. That's what we're talking about as believers. That's central to who we are. We've all signed up for that. So they've got the cross down. They're forgiven. They're 100% real, genuine, sincere, authentic Christians. But this all-surpassing, transcendent peace talk feels like a fantasy, like a fairy tale, like a thing that we talk about, but that doesn't really exist. And maybe even a little bit of like a bait and switch, like, hey, you want transcendent peace? Sign up. We totally have that. You're looking for it? No problem. Just ride your magic carpet to the end of the rainbow and a little troll there will ask you a few questions. Don't worry, they're easy. Then you ride your unicorn across the bridge and you're there. Transcendent peace. You got it. It kind of feels like that. It feels like it's a fantasy. So, like, seriously, what's that about? Like, why isn't it working? All right, so here's where it gets real. So here's where you lean in and you make sure you catch what I'm about to say. All right, stop thinking about football or food or stop playing Block Blast if that's what you're doing. right here. This peace thing is a two-way street. It's a two-way street. Just because God has made peace with you doesn't mean that you have made peace with him. Just because God has made peace with you doesn't mean that you have made peace with him. Accepting the message of the cross, it works. And it rescues us, it redeems us, it restores us. And what it means is all the gunk between us and God gets cleared out. And that means God doesn't have any issue with you. You're forgiven, redeemed, restored. He delights in you, child of God. Well done, good and faithful service. The cross does the work. It's clear. No issues that God has with you. But that doesn't mean that you don't have any issues with him. And the fact is, if we'll think about it, we might frame it one way or another, but just about all of us, I assume, to one degree or another, are wrestling with questions that we just don't have the answers to. And it's really brought out by just the messiness of this world. Like, how can this world be so unfair and so just brutal? And we have to live with this tension that, like, just some awful thing could happen to any one of us at any time. Like, we're not guaranteed our next breath. How are we supposed to deal with that tension? And guys, the problem of evil and suffering and pain and loss and grief in this world is just so hard to deal with. And we're just left wondering, like, why does it have to be like this? Like, if God is so good and he's so powerful and he's so loving, then why is there so much pain in this world? Why are things so messed up? I don't know, everybody's different. We approach things differently. Maybe that question for you stays like way off in the back of your mind, just this sort of dull hum that you think of from time to time. Or maybe it's this like blaring siren that nags you every single day or somewhere in between. But I mean, I think for all of us, it's there. Jesus is the problem to the sin and suffering. Great. Yes. But how did this world get so broken in the first place? Like, didn't he create it? And isn't he sovereign? And isn't he the source of everything? It's great that he's the solution, but it kind of seems like maybe he's like the solution to a problem that he caused, or at least that he allowed. And we don't really know that. We're not supposed to think like that or say things like that. You probably don't have any accusation at all to levy against God, but still, we can't fully dismiss that question either. So what are we supposed to do with that? Because that can very easily be the sort of low-level, sort of baseline suspicion of God, and it can just follow us everywhere. What do we do about that? Back to our text here, 6 and 7. They're instructive. Paul says, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need. Thank him for all he has done. And then you will experience God's peace. Those are the instructions. Like, they're instructions. It's great. And those instructions are kind of the common church answer for this problem. You know, it's like, hey, I'm struggling. I can't seem to feel settled. I'm anxious all the time. I need this peace. And then that's sort of the instructions, what we just read. This is the famous and I think maybe somewhat infamous program, the just give it all to God and be at peace program. But here's the thing, think about it. If you think about this, this will become obvious to you. The just give it all to God and be at peace program cannot possibly work if we are at any level suspicious of God. It just won't work. So what do we do about that? The answer isn't so much in solving the mystery that we're talking about here. By the way, if your expectation was that I was going to solve the mystery of evil and suffering, you might want to go ahead and lower those expectations. I don't have that in my bag. I'm not holding out on you. The ice is starting to fall. Cool. We might just hang out in here together until the next service comes in. We'll be like, we're just going to stay here, wait for the sunshine. Okay. So anyway, the answer forward here is not so much about solving this mystery. It's more so about diving into an even deeper mystery. So for that, Ephesians chapter 3, this is Paul again, now writing to a different church in a different city. He says this, and these are really important words. I want to encourage you to sort of lean in and try to picture them, try to follow what he's saying as we read it. He says this, Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. So there's this process as we increasingly trust in him, he increasingly makes his home in our hearts. And he says this, your roots will grow down into God's love and keep you strong. And may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high, how deep his love is. May you experience the love of Christ. Well, it's too great to fully understand. I love this. He was like, you should understand it. Everyone should understand it. All God's people should understand it. By the way, I get it. You can't begin to understand it. I know you can't comprehend it, but you should. And here's how. Your roots grow deep into God's love. And then it says, you begin to experience God's love. And then it says, finally, then you will be made complete with all the fullness of life and power that comes from God. So I want you to think about this. The image here is of a tree that is deeply rooted in the love of God. A tree with roots that just keep digging deeper and deeper into the reality, the ultimate truth of the universe, the reality of God's love. And he goes, from that, you start to understand God's love. And then he acknowledges, you can't fully understand it, we get it, because you can't really get your head around the enormity of God's love, let's also recognize this. He says it gives rise to an experience of God's love. So he's saying that somehow through that root system, through being deeply rooted and grounded in God's love, you begin to have this encounter with God's love, an experience of God's love, something that's beyond words, something that's beyond our comprehension. You don't think your way there. You just begin to experience. And again, the image is a tree whose roots bring an awareness of God's love from that, an understanding of God's love from there, an experience of God's love, and a different kind of grasping. And there's something really important embedded in all of that, which is no matter how smart you are, you can't think your way to that. You can't think your way to trust. Life with Jesus isn't a calculation. It's a relationship. So a long time ago, I fell in love with Sharon. I convinced her to marry me. It wasn't easy, but eventually she came around. You think about this, you know how much you have to trust somebody to marry them? I mean, the amount of control you're giving them, the amount of access to your life, the ability they then have to just make a mess of everything. Like, it takes an enormous amount of trust. I do premarital counseling, and one of my goals, I don't know if this is good or bad, but one of my goals in premarital counseling is to scare them out of it. I just figure if I can scare you out of it, you're probably not committed enough. So I'm like, all right, let's make this super scary. So there's this thing I always say, or I often say, and it's dramatic and heavy-handed, but it really is where my mind goes. I was like, getting married. I'm like, look, you two realize this, right? Like, look them in the eye, all beady-eyed and weird. I'm like, you realize that getting married is like taking a gun, a pistol, loading it, cocking the gun, pointing it at your face, placing it in your spouse-to-be's hand, putting their finger on the trigger, and then saying, please don't squeeze the trigger, not even once, as long as we both shall live. Did you realize how terrifying that is? How much you have to trust somebody? And it is dramatic and sort of heavy-handed. It's not like much of an exaggeration. It's not like that, okay? It's a loaded deal. So anyway, I convinced her, Sharon and I got married. We made that commitment. In about 3 weeks, by the way, it'll be 22 years, and she hasn't pulled the trigger yet. I'm so happy. So how did we come to trust one another that much? And look, and like, you know, do I want to marry this girl? I thought about it. I mean, I thought so hard with my little brain. I thought really hard about it, and I prayed real hard for my little heart. But I didn't decide that way. And it wasn't a formula on a spreadsheet. It was not a calculation. And while I was as rational about it as I possibly could be, but it was not primarily a rational decision. It was a relationship. I mean, you know what it really was? Like, you don't know what I'm going to say, but you already know what it really was. We just logged the hours until we knew. She and I built a relationship, and we logged the hours until we knew, because that's how trusting relationships get built, period. And Paul says, man, with God, it's like that. It's like a tree, man, and trees don't grow overnight. Everybody knows that. But in time, you log the hours. Those roots, man, they get deeper and deeper into God's love. And eventually, it's not that you fully understand God's love, but through this experience, you finally start to get it. You finally start to get it. And even though you can't quite articulate it, you know this is a God who can be trusted. He is great and he is good. It's not a computation. It's an experience. It's an encounter born of relationship. That's how you get there. I love the way St. Augustine said this. He said, we come to God not by navigation, but by love. All right? Trust is not something you can navigate your way to. It's an experience born out of relationship. Again, just like every relationship ever. All right, let's do a little crowd participation here. I'm going to ask by a show of hands. And before I say this, no judgment at all, okay? Safe place. No judgment at all. It is January 5th. I'm going to ask you who has and has not taken down their Christmas decorations at this point. Who has taken their Christmas decorations down already? That's a good bit. Now, come on. Hey, safe place. I love you all. Who has not yet taken down all their... That's not... Okay. It's about 60-40, something like that. Did you notice I raised my hands for both? Yeah, it's because we've already taken down our decorations, except for in the basement, because that was my job, and I procrastinated. So, true story. But anyway, if you're one in that second group and you haven't taken down your Christmas tree yet, maybe this afternoon you could take a long look at it and contemplate for a while and contemplate the obvious, which is that Christmas trees are so dang weird. It's so strange that we do that. Have you ever thought about how odd it is that we just put big old pine trees in our living rooms for a few weeks a year and just act like it's normal? It's like there's a tree here now. It's like, what? Why is this? Is it from the Bible? No, it is not. And look, they're beautiful, but it's so weird, right? So there's all that, and then there's the whole real fake debate and that whole thing. I'm sure. I'm not gonna ask you. I don't want to split the church over that, but that's a whole thing. Just by the way, on the surface, real trees seem better to me in every way. Like the whole sort of idyllic thing where you go out with the family and you're all wearing scarves and stuff and you cut down, you pick the perfect tree and you wrap it up and put it on the minivan and you put it in play. Everything smells nice and you got sap everywhere and it just seems better in every way. We have never done it once, not one time. I'm like, I'm not, it's a lot of work. I'm out. It's like, nope. Anyway, so at some point each year, I sit by our very fake plastic tree and I think about how beautiful it is, because it is beautiful. And I think about how Jesus is the light of the world and ask the Lord to speak to me. And I just, this year I couldn't do it, man. I just kept thinking about how strange it is. I was just like, this is so strange. Anyway, while I was thinking about that, I think the Lord kind of tapped me on the shoulder and he pointed out something I'd like for you to at least think about. That a Christmas tree, if we're going to look at it through kind of a negative lens, and I love Christmas trees, but a Christmas tree is kind of like a metaphor for half-hearted, culturally based Christianity. If you think about it, even if you get a live tree, it's still dead when it gets to your house. It's not rooted or grounded like Paul is talking about to the Ephesians. It's just a big decoration born out of a societal norm. And some people have really beautiful Christmas trees, and that's great. But a Christmas tree in your living room cannot bear fruit. It cannot grow. If you woke up one morning and your Christmas tree had started budding pine cones or flowers or whatever they bud, you would call the news. Or you would call me because you'd seen a miracle. Or you would assume that it was a prank, because a Christmas tree in your living room cannot grow and cannot bear fruit. It can leak sap. It can smell nice. It can be a fire hazard. It can be pretty. It can impress your friends. But it cannot bear fruit. And again, it strikes me as a metaphor for unrooted, disengaged, culturally driven instead of relationally driven faith. Our faith can easily become just a thing that we do because that's what we do. And it ends up being a decoration that looks nice. It's born out of societal expectation, but it's not living or dynamic. It's not rooted in God's love. It's just an ornament. And this is why Paul is pleading with us to have a faith, a living faith, an act dynamic faith that has roots that grow down into God's love, grounded, firmly established. Our life with Jesus is not a tree we chop down and put in our house. It's a living tree that we build our entire house around. That's fundamentally different. As an aside, by the way, you guys know Pastor Natasha. She's our community and care pastor. True story. Her dad did this. He built their house around a living tree. All right, so picture that if you would. Now picture it as all beautiful and perfect, okay? because that serves my point better. The fact is, and Natasha told me this, it's super problematic in a bunch of ways, but that doesn't serve my point well. So I'm just gonna leave that over there. It creates some problems, but the image works. That's the picture that he's talking about. That's what Paul is talking about. Our faith isn't supposed to be a decoration we stick in our living room. It's supposed to be this deeply rooted, living thing that we build our entire lives around. And the alternative to that only looks like something alive and is really just for show. And that type of faith, if we can call it that, does not even begin to establish the relationship that we need to put our trust in God and then get that peace that we're all so desperate for and that we keep talking about. The challenge here is to actually obey Peter's command to us in Scripture. This is 1 Peter 5, I believe, where he says, cast your cares on him because he cares for you. That's the challenge, to actually do that, to cast our cares on him. You can't and you won't do that until you've lived this rooted and grounded reality that Paul's talking about, whereby the trust is gained by daily walking with Jesus. And through that, you begin to accept his love and you even start to comprehend his love. And from there, Paul says, you have like an experience of his love. The Psalms teach it like this. They say, be still and know that he is God, and taste and see that he's good. That's the Psalms explaining all of this in two lines. Be still and know that he's God. And then taste and see, not think and see or comprehend and see. And I'm never going to tell you to shut your mind off and you should ask all the hard questions. And they're always welcome here. Don't mishear that. But in the end, you can't think your way there. Be still and know that he is God, and then taste and see that he's good. We cannot wrap our heads around the problem of evil and suffering and pain in this world. And this is primarily a thinking problem. It's primarily a mental problem because we're trying to cope with the cognitive dissonance. And so we look for a mental solution, but it doesn't primarily have a cognitive mental solution. Because frankly, no disrespect, we don't have the horsepower to get it done. Who are we to ponder, much less comprehend the ways of God? I mean, let's face it, if we could understand him, he would be less than what he is. And that's difficult to accept, but we must. It's just beyond our grasp. And that's okay. That's okay. God knows that we can't figure it out. He knows it's beyond our grasp. For Christmas, we got, guys, we have this dog, Tyson. He's awesome, I guess. But we love him too much. Like, I think it's a sin. I think we love him too much. Definitely Sharon does. Definitely a sin for her. Anyway, so Christmas. Sorry, babe. I was just catching strays. It's not my notes. So for Christmas, we get him like a bunch of gifts. He has a stocking. It's like a ridiculous amount of effort goes to this dog who has no idea what's happening. He has no clue. But anyway, we got him this ball thrower thing where if he drops the ball in, it's like, and it throws the ball for him because he wants us to throw the ball for him 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, all the time, forever. And it's like, I just don't love you that much, man. I love you a lot. I'm so sick of this. I've got stuff to do, okay? And so it's like, great, we'll just have a machine do it. He can drop it and we can get love through an electrical outlet. And then the machine will throw the ball and he can go get it and he can go all day long and be exhausted at the end of the day and leave us alone. That's the plan. That little dog, all he has to do is pick up the ball and drop it in the, he cannot get it. His little dog brain just cannot figure out that you just pick it up and you drop it and then everything you've ever wanted in life, and it is all he's ever wanted. He's like, I'm happy, I'm well fed, I'm warm. All I need is someone or thing to throw this stupid ball, and it's everything he could ever want, and he just can't get it. And we've all taken turns. We've tried. We've been like, let's try gentle parenting. Let's come in hard. We've tried it all. And we've all, except for Bryce, Bryce is so chill, but the rest of us, we've all had moments where we're just like, drop it. We're so frustrated. He can't. It's not his fault. He's an old dog's new tricks. He can't do it. He can't figure it. It's not his fault. And look, guys, It is good. Again, I'm not telling you not to ask questions. It's good for us to wrestle with these questions. It is good. But in the end, it's just beyond our grasp. And I know it leaves us frustrated with the Lord. But we can't get our little human brains around it. It's beyond our grasp. Of course, there are things within the heart and the way of God that are beyond our grasp. And God, above all, understands. He's way more patient with us than I am with Tyson. He's not saying, why can't you get it? He knows we can't get it. It's more than a mental assent. I can tell you that God is worthy of your trust. You can agree with me 100%. You can make that mental assent, and that won't do it. And Paul recognizes that. And so the scripture here is pointing out an experience of God's love that comes from being rooted and grounded in an ongoing relationship with Him. Our minds are powerful and good, but they cannot take us all the way to trust. A gap will always remain. There'll always be a gap. So how? Just like with any relationship. Guys, full stop. You've got to log the hours. Just got to log the hours. Build a relationship of trust like every other relationship of trust gets built. You'll never have that type of trust without that deeply rooted relationship. It means doing the stuff. We know the stuff, man. Walk with Jesus. A commitment where you set aside the time, you make it happen. I know it's not easy. And I know we have an enemy who lies and deceives, and I know we're all busier than we could possibly. I know all that stuff. But we make the time for prayer, for scripture, for worship, for day by day, hour by hour, walking with Jesus, left foot, right foot, logging the hours. And the roots go deeper. And you log the hours, and the roots go deeper. And in that, it's not because your brain figures it out. Your soul starts to resonate. And those roots get so deep that you realize, I can trust Him. I really can cast my cares on Him. Not because I thought my way to it, because I lived my way to it, walking with Jesus. Left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. No shortcuts. And believe it or not, I love a shortcut, man. I love a shortcut. You actually don't want a shortcut because the journey is incredible. It's so good to walk with Jesus. It's the best of life, I'm telling you. All right, that's enough out of me. The band can come on up. I just want to make one more point, one more verse here quickly. Paul ends this discussion on peace. We looked at Philippians 4, 6, and 7. But the paragraph continues on, and in verse 9, he ends it with a simple command, and like this core principle. So let's quickly look at one more verse. Paul says, keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. He's like, just live it out, man, right? And then what's he say? Then the God of peace will be with you. The command is to live this thing out, stick with it, walk in allegiance to the Lord, left foot, right foot, in a growing relationship with Him. And then the principle that comes from that is that the God of peace will be with us. So we're trying to figure out how we can have peace with God so that we can have the peace of God. And he just sort of bottom lines it here for us. The peace of God comes from being with the God of peace. The peace of God comes from being with the God of peace. And nothing else will do it. There's more to it, man. We're going to talk about this for a few more weeks. But at the very core, the irreducible minimum, just like everything else around here, walk with Jesus. Walk with Jesus. All right, we're going to do this just a little bit different here for Selah. Let me invite you to stand as you're able. We usually kind of stop and reflect at this point, and then I find a very spiritual way to say you guys should do some navel gazing. But I just did a whole spiel about how we can't think our way to this. So let's not just sit here and try to think our way to it. Instead, let's try to live into it. And for me, that feels like celebration. Like, I can think my way to God being good, and that'll get me to a place that leaves a gap. I can try to think my way to trust in Jesus, and it's still going to leave a gap. What we need is that experience, that encounter with His love to fill that gap. And a great way to at least start to do that is to just really celebrate what God has already done. So, here's usually when we're nice and quiet. Instead, let's be nice and loud, and let's celebrate what Christ has done and is doing in our lives. And then I'll come up and close the service after that.